two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Nightside Project. Finish the day happy, happy with Ethan Millard and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome to The Nightside Project. I'm Ethan Millard. I got Alex Keery here with you. Another episode. Thanks so much for grabbing it, downloading it, tuning in. However the kids are doing.
I think we've shocked people when they get onto their podcasts.
I know.
The last few weeks, they're all, what? Somebody sat on the refresh. Somebody sat on the post button on accident over at Nightside. I'm sure it posted something fake. No, it's just us.
They're probably just rolling on some.
Yeah, whoops.
Probably some air check from Dave and Debbie or something.
Pressed enter on it. It just kept going. Another episode. Hey, Ethan, our Banbury Cross revelation from last week, it's just been, I've had people reaching out and being like, and because I actually ended up driving by it, not on purpose. Like I didn't make the lone trip just to see, because I think I knew that it was there in Centerville. Okay. Banbury Cross, if you're not familiar, amazing donut shop in Salt Lake City. And here's the other thing, people come out of the war room and go, oh, those donuts aren't that good.
Yeah.
Listen, for a guy who doesn't eat carbs, any donut sounds good, and Banbury Cross is the freaking best. And
who says Banbury Cross isn't that good?
You know how people are. It's just that like a guy goes, I actually prefer
Albertsons.
Albertsons. No, but it's like, you know, whatever. We all have our different tastes. Like I'm not gonna poo poo somebody. Well, I will, but I mean, like I'm not gonna. No. I know why people have different tastes. It's just like, I know when people overdo stuff. I think In-N-Out's overrated. I think, so I get it. And sometimes I'm on the other side of that where people go berserk about something and you go, I didn't think it was that great. But Banbury Cross is not that for me. So there you go. Location in Centerville. I took the picture, finally posted it and said, oh, this is amazing. So, yeah. Hey, we're doing this early this week. Millard, because you're taking a trip, buddy.
Yeah, I am going what to Disneyland.
Oh, now hold on a minute. You're going to Disney?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you got money coming out of the...
Oh, well, yeah.
I actually saw this button earlier, and I was like,
Poppy,
we haven't used this in a long time.
Let's take the jet to Disneyland.
Honestly, Disney is... It's always been expensive, but like right now is like a weird... It's like surge pricing for Uber, but for humans and real life. Oh, do you have something. Could you give me the Monte Cristo sandwich? It's fried.
So, I mean, let me tell you something.
So ridiculous. How much is a ticket to go to Disney, though? You told me last week. What was it?
Like $1,000.
It is.
No, it's not that much.
No, but I mean, like to get in, it's like $200, isn't it? A day.
Yeah, when you're taking
one park,
the whole family. You got to plan for it, right? We had to plan for this expense. But I'll tell you what, though. So they're doing this new thing where it's called Genie Plus, where you can pay an extra $20 to get ahead of the line on a certain number of rides.
You said Genie Plus? Did you say Genie
it's
Plus?
Called Genie Plus. Yeah, you're going to learn all about this.
Genie Plus, dear. Put me down for Genie, but not the regular Genie. Put me down for Genie Plus. What the heck does Genie Plus mean? What does Genie Plus even freaking mean, man, at Disney?
So basically it's a way to manage the lines. Okay. So you can just go and you can wait standby, right? You can just kind of ride up the line, just live with the line.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a poor. Or you can pay $20 per person per day.
Oh my god.
And you basically get like a fast pass. You basically like it's
because the fast passes aren't
thing.
Because the pa- the fast passes aren't really a thing.
Fast pass.
Yeah.
If you want to get ahead in line, you got to pay $20 per day, and then per person. And then on top of that, the most popular rides, and this includes Rise of the Resistance and the Cars Land ride,
yeah,
like with the cars, yep, and the Spider-Man ride, which I didn't know existed until this week. Those are an extra $20. So you can't buy the Genie Plus and get on those rides. If you want to ride those rides, you got to pay an extra $20.
Oh my gosh. So it would be an extra, for your family, it'd be an extra $200 a day to get the double Genie Plus pass.
That's exactly right. So we're not doing any.
Oh, you're not going to do it. Okay. Never mind.
You can stop the okay. music. We're standing in line with the rest of the homeless people.
The poors. Oh my gosh, you're terrible. Well, but so, I mean, like, here's my thing though about your trip, because I'm actually wondering how you're going to do this, because you have teenagers now, and yeah, and teenagers, I feel like, are not, your teenagers in particular are not interested at all in Disneyland, or are they? Are they well, type of like, yeah, no, I love this place still, or something? I don't know.
No,
they've been.
Be the runner. Look, they're going to have a fun time, right? They're going to have a fun time because they're not at home, right? They're going to have a fun time. But let me tell you something, because I got a bone to pick with my kids, because they've been messing with me.
What do you mean?
So they've been running down Disney for years. Man, Mickey Mouse is stupid.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah.
I'm like, all right, well, you know.
My recollection is that you have one son who made some inappropriate pictures of Mickey. Not inappropriate, but it wasn't inappropriate, but it was more like they were scary. Like, it's kind of like Pablo Picasso, like kind of freaky version of Mickey, you know. I mean, he's a blessed artist, Ethan. I'm just saying, yes. Yeah, you can't show it to little kids because they'll go, Mommy, what happened to the mouse? Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I will say this. So I'll post this on Twitter so people can see it. Okay. Ethan Millard, KSL. Mm. But when he first showed me the picture, I was startled. Like, I didn't know what to think.
Oh, the Mickey, really the creepy Mickey picture.
You saw it. Yeah. You remember when you
first
saw it.
And I was like, oh my. Oof. Yeah.
All right. So anyway, they've been running down Disneyland, and I thought, you know, but I love Disneyland, right? I love Disneyland, but I thought, well, I guess we're probably not going to go to Disneyland again. Maybe when I have grandkids, right? I'd kind of. So, but last year at some point in the summer, we were having this conversation, and they all of a sudden they were like, no, man, we love Disneyland. We love Disneyland. I just make fun of Mickey Mouse sometimes. We love Disneyland. I'm like, oh, all right. Okay. So we plan this whole thing, and I roll it out. I'm like, hey, guess what we're going to do for Christmas? Instead of doing presents, we're going to do Disneyland. And they're like, oh, really? Disneyland, Dad?
Oh, so now they got it.
Now they're too cool for it.
Yeah. It's because, they know. Kids know that when you make the purchase, and you're on board with it, it literally becomes less cool. It's like, eh, Dad. Because if you say no, they want to keep pushing it. But then as soon as you say yeah, then they go, eh, it's actually kind of dumb.
It was probably within 2 months of them insisting, no, we love Disneyland, right? Within 2 months, I had hotel tickets, Disneyland tickets, everything lined up. I was like, hey, we're doing this. And like, all of a sudden, they're like, oh, Dad, we're not going to have that much fun. Ugh. But let me tell you something.
They aren't going to have that much fun.
No, here's the thing. I got the last laugh. So both of my sons have a job now, right? They're working as a hall.
What do they do? At the schools, yeah.
Which is a job that I once had.
Yeah.
At Jackson Elementary.
Way to teach them how to aim high there, buddy. Come on.
Well, you know.
What's the pay on something like
do
that?
Do some work.
Like, what should a 14-year-old be earning in 2022?
I'm actually not sure what the pay is, but can I say this? Because they were a state employee,
they got paid
through the whole pandemic.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
What do you mean? What do you mean they got paid? Like,
lift the damn finger.
Your kids are state employees?
Yeah.
Do they work 4/10s? So, like, what is the deal?
So
they get Fridays off?
So when we went to shut down, all the schools were closed. You remember this back in the day?
I think this is
they just kept getting they just kept
okay.
Getting paid.
Hold on a minute. They aren't salaried. Why on earth are they like? What are we talking about? Is it because it was like a relief thing? I get doing that for somebody. I get doing that for people who, you know, it's like, hey, this is an extra source of income. Like the kids who are the 14-year-olds who the whole point is you need to work to get some money. This is a real problem. This needs to be exposed. Utah paying kids not to do a thing. I'm telling on. I'm whistleblowing this whole thing. If there's money involved.
No, I'll just tell them. I'll just tell them the money, the family needed the money. I'll tell them my kids paid the mortgage.
I just think it's funny that anyway, We're going down the rabbit hole here. Either way, they've got jobs. They've got jobs that they don't do anything for. They still get paid for.
And so I said this. Hey, guess what? I've already covered the tickets, the hotel, and everything. If we sit down for a family meal, I'll pay for it. Everything else is coming out of your pocket.
Which is what? Like if they want to get the churro on their own, if they want to get that balloon, the clear balloon that has the color, the colored Mickey Mouse ears inside, that's also out of their own pocket.
They're on their own.
Will they use their own money for stuff? My kids do the thing where they go, well, now that you said it's my money, I don't actually like anything. Or they spend it on the dumbest crap. I could see both of your kids like walking away and then coming back with three churros apiece and go, there's my $33. There it is.
Oh, $33 for a churro?
No, for three churros, yeah.
Sign me up.
Oh, I mean, how much is a dang churro?
I don't know.
Disney churro.
I'll know price. I'll know tomorrow. I'll know.
Okay. Disney just revealed its brand new celebration churro. Oh, you can grab the celebration churro at Disneyland for only $7. You can for an extra dollar, you get the dipping sauce. What? Okay. Yeah. Look for the churro cart in front of Sleeping Beauty's castle.
But the dipping sauce is just something else for the seagull to stick its beak into.
We were in Finland one time, and it was on a cruise, and definitely a person bought a huge ice cream cone, and this seagull came by. Their move was, it was on a pier, and it wasn't us. It wasn't in our group, because these people bought a giant ice cream cone, and these seagulls have been, they know what's going on.
Yeah.
They didn't try to steal it from her or anything. All they did was knock it straight out of her hand into the water. Didn't try to go after it. It just went, knocked it straight out of her hand because it fell straight into the water off the pier. Because it's startling when something just kind of knocks your hand. Your immediate reaction is to let go. So, yeah.
That's what they do. They just want you to drop it.
I've seen the seagulls,
Then they know one of them's
going to
get it.
All right, so you're going to Disneyland. Good for you.
It's going to be great. I'm going to make my kids pay for it.
Should be really, really good.
It's going to be fun. So if anyone wants my television, you should know that I've got two pit bull mixes
at
the house.
So you guys probably have house sitters then because your dogs are going to be here.
Jack and Judy.
Yeah, Jack and Judy are still alive. Good for them. I'm surprised they haven't eaten each other. Dogs, by the way.
Well, they're good for a couple of things.
I know that they've probably grown on you, but I can't believe that Emily really likes those dogs anymore.
Well.
See? Mm-hmm.
You know, we got them for the kids. I've never really been. I like dogs, but I like other people's dogs.
Yeah.
So I've never been into dogs, but I'll tell you what, man. When they come running at you barking, you're going to pee your pants. And so when you've got to leave your kids home at night for various things, feels pretty good.
Yeah, it's a startling situation.
It feels pretty good knowing that Jack and Judy are there to regulate. It's just the problem is you've got to regulate that. So, you've always got to be sure of what doors open, what gates open, you've got to kind of monitor that. And that can, but you make that part of your routine and you're going to be fine. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
You can have, Alex, I'm just saying you can have killer dogs and it would still work.
Yeah.
So
who's letting them out to poo, though?
Oh, those go in the house.
it's terrible. All right. Perfect. That's good. Now it's your house, man. You don't have to worry about it. So you said you had a couple things for me today.
I'll be at Disneyland.
You said you had a couple things for me today.
Oh, we didn't want to only talk about Disneyland.
No, but that's what I'm saying is the couple things was that your couple of boys are spending their own money at Disneyland because I'm going to go ahead and flush this episode if that's what we're doing.
And you know what else is when we get there, I'm just going to say, all right, see you guys tonight. Let him go.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to share with you this story that I saw on Twitter. So there's this guy that I follow on Twitter. His name's David Zabinski.
Mm-hmm.
And he does these big, long threads of interesting things and interesting moments, right? And so he had this one on this story in Australia where I thought it was so phenomenal. So after World War II, all of these Australian soldiers came back, or maybe it was after World War I, all these Australian soldiers came back, and the government was faced with this this problem of what to do with all these soldiers. They needed jobs for them, right?
Yeah.
They needed something to do.
Yep.
So they made all this land available. They said, hey, all you veterans, all this land's available to you. You can have it. You can farm it. They're going to stimulate the economy, give these guys something to do. So they all go out and they start farming wheat, right? Well, their wheat just gets demolished by... What do you think in Australia would demolish the wheat crop?
Oh, the kangaroos. The koala bears.
No. Good guess, but
the poisonous snakes. The poisonous snakes. The poisonous spiders. Oh, yeah.
The emus would come through. The emus are these giant birds. They come through in flocks and eat all the wheat down to just all the way down to the ground.
Well, they're fat birds. They're big birds. Those are big birds.
Big.
And they're nasty, too. You know, the cassowaries and the emus and the ostriches, they have dinosaur claws. Like, they will murder you. So
this is after World War I, is in the 30s. So I'm going to switch over here. So at that point, by 1932, the government decides we got to do something about this. They literally, not literally, but they figuratively declare war on the emus. So what they did is the Australian Minister of Defense.
They start setting wheat traps for these emus. Did they almost go extinct or something? Or what did they do to them?
No.
How'd they get them?
No. You got to hear this. You can't get out in front of it because you don't know where this is going.
Oh.
Right? This is going to surprise you. That's the point of Twitter. It's going to surprise you.
I thought you
right?
just said big mouse traps, big emu traps.
So the Minister of Defense assigns Major G.P.W. Meredith of the Royal Australian Artillery to lead a small army into Western Australia with 10,000 rounds of ammunition.
Oh, my gosh.
Machine guns.
Oh, boy.
And what they were going to do is they was going to go find these flocks and just shoot them, right?
So what? It's the same thing fly. Remember Dance with Wolves? You know, when they come over that ridge and the white man had already rolled through and murdered all the buffalo for just their pelts, nothing else?
That's what they had in mind, right? That's what they had in
mind.
Mow
these things
down. So listen to this. From November 2nd to November 8th, so that is a... 6-day period, Major Meredith and his men fired 2,500 rounds of ammunition towards thousands and thousands of emus.
Oh, how?
Those
wow.
2,500 rounds. Do you know how many emus they killed with 2,500 rounds?
Seven.
200.
That's bad. That's a bad ratio.
It's really bad. It's 12.5 bullets for every emu.
So
it's
now, really bad because ratio. Here's the thing, they have small heads. You know, so like, no. That's good. that's really shots. Bad sniper practice, you know? So you got to go for the body. Don't shoot its neck. Don't shoot its head. Those are too small of go for center mass on that emu. I mean, that's a lesson for life, right?
Here's what happened is basically almost immediately in a move that I don't think anyone would think from an emu, almost immediately emus realized what was happening. So what they did is they split up into countless small packs.
They didn't, Ethan, they did not realize what was happening.
That forced the Australians to spend more time searching for birds, right? It also cut down. They didn't have any large flocks to target. They could only go after them a few at a time. And what happened is that each pack would have one emu set aside to watch for the soldiers while the others grazed, right? And so they split into small groups with one emu. And they did this. I mean, this was a 6-day period, right? Where one emu would stand there 6 feet tall, watching out for the soldiers, alert everyone else. They could scatter even further, making them basically impossible targets. They couldn't get close to them. They couldn't get good shots on them. And they weren't able to do it. So what they did is they shut down the whole project. But... they left all the ammunition behind. The next couple of decades, the actual farmers who were, you know, veterans, over the next couple of decades, the veterans took the ammo that the army had left behind in their war on emus, and they went ahead and turned emus into an endangered species.
Oh, okay, so what they did was the right way to do it. You got to chip away. You can't make it like one of those mobile games where they're all... Can you mow down this entire army of tiny elephants with your laser guns? Like, yeah, that's not how you do it.
But I think it's phenomenal because when they rolled up, the emus were in these huge flocks.
Yeah.
And almost immediately they split into small groups with a lookout for each group, and they just became impossible to hunt.
So has anybody brought up the emu genocide of the 20th century? No one's ever brought it up until now.
I had never heard of it.
The great emu genocide.
Mm-hmm. I think you're correct to use the word genocide.
the great emu genocide. And mm-hmm. and nobody wants to talk about it because there's a bunch of emu genocide deniers out there, too. I mean, there's some people who tweet it out and they get themselves in trouble, man.
Yeah, mostly.
Big time.
They're mostly in Australia. So, but.
Right. Millard, so I got a McDonald's story for you.
Let's hear it.
So they're trying to get people into the whole, so what they're calling these menu hacks, okay? They're adding these things to the menu to try to get people to, you know, go through and kind of get this weird one-off item, right? Mm-hmm. There's limited time menu items such as the hash brown McMuffin, which is a sausage McMuffin with a hash brown on it. Okay. A crunchy mm-hmm. double. These are McDonald's items now. A crunchy double, which is a 6-piece chicken McNugget combined with barbecue sauce on a double cheeseburger.
Oh, dang.
Yes.
Would you go for that?
No, but I would go for this next one. And I think
I'm not totally great on mixing the chicken and the beef.
No, but I think the crunch from the outside of the nugget is going to be important in this one. But Ethan, this is the one you're going to want. The surf and turf. You ready for this? Filet-O-Fish and the quarter pounder. Okay. All right. Now, if that one's not classy enough for you, the land, air, and sea, which is the Big Mac, McChicken, and Filet-O-Fish. These are all things you can get right out of. He's like, get a... The thing is you do the double Filet-O-Fish, which is something that you're the only person on the planet that I've ever actually met who's gotten it. Periodically, you'll see the sign almost mm-hmm. tempting, like almost joking with you, like, hey, the double Filet-O-Fish is here, which is a fried piece of fish with a piece of American cheese on it. Two pieces of American cheese.
But you got to understand this, though. It actually is... one of the best sandwiches. The double filet is one of the best sandwiches McDonald's makes. And I remember, this is no joke, I actually remember the first time I ever had it.
Okay. The Surf and Turf is exclusive to the McDonald's app. If you go through the drive-thru and ask for the Surf and Turf, you'll get a free medium fry and soft drink. This actually sounds worth it.
You think you do it?
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
McDonald's app.
So you have to order it by.
Go through the.
You got to order it by. You got to order it by the. You know, by its name. So you got to walk up and go, "Hey, give me the crunchy double. Hey, give me the surf and turf." Mm-hmm. And the surf and turf is interesting because it's kind of like the Big Mac, because that bottom bun of the Filet-O-Fish. Is actually, oh my gosh, the beef patty with the Filet-O-Fish kind of looks, and the tartar sauce looks a little unhinged, because you got ketchup and mustard with the tartar sauce. That's not good. You can't do that. You got to go one or the other. No,
tartar sauce.
I think tartar sauce is a standalone.
If you swirled a French fry through tartar sauce, ketchup, and mustard, you would like it.
No, not doing it. No, the mustard, because ketchup is a pretty benign thing to mix with like a cream sauce, like a tartar. But mustard, it gets in there and it kind of, and I'm a mustard guy. So.
But you don't want
mustard,
well,
but you're
like
not going to eat mustard.
Thing.
There's no, Ethan, there's no world where mustard and fish go together. There's no world where the mustard and fish go together. So
if you think about the sauce, right, mixing it with the sauce, because look, you have mustard in mustard and mayonnaise.
Yeah.
What do you think is tartar sauce? Tartar sauce is mayonnaise, right?
It's mayonnaise and like a relishy whatever.
Mayonnaise and pickles and tartar.
Yeah, it's cream of tartar. Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, I'm going to play some music, and I assume you have a Zen headline. If you don't, I do.
Oh, do you? Well, let's hear yours.
Okay, so.
I've done the last two.
You have done the last two? Okay, so I got to go back over to my page here. And if you'll forgive me, because this is kind of a. This is a little bit of a sports story.
Sorry.
But these two college twin sisters, Haley and Hannah Cavender, both go to Fresno State, and They're basketball players. And they're, like, okay basketball players. They're not, like, you know, I mean, they're women's basketball players that are, they're not, like, All-American going to get drafted, right. From what I understand from this story. But these are two girls who are making history because the Cavender twins are massive on social media. And they are set to make $1 million each this year with their name, image, likeness deal. The first to have been the only first two that are now millionaire female athletes in the college ranks. You know, based on their reputation of it. So they've got a massive social media following. And I'll tell you right now too, we've been approached before about taking on athletes from BYU or Utah or whatever. And sometimes their agents will come to us and say, "Hey, but they have 100,000 followers on Instagram. They have 68,000 followers on Instagram, which eclipses, you know, the KSL News Radio Instagram page, right?" Which,
yeah.
So you think about, like, you know, coverage. It's actually worth jumping in on somebody who is a big time social media person. So
you going to partner up with anyone? You going to jump on
it? Oh, we can't afford any of this. Are you kidding? Can't afford any of these people, but yeah, they're college athletes that are really good at basketball, but they've become insane. So they're getting money. They're getting money from the WWE, Champ Sports, who's one of my former employers, East Bay, also related to Champs Sports, Boost Mobile. They're all throwing money at these twins. I'm happy for them. And the old rules were, and guess what? This isn't even paying these athletes for, it's not pay to play. It's because they have a value outside of their basketball skill. And previously, the NCAA was like, "How dare you? You're a student athlete." And I can't tell you how many meetings I've been in, Ethan, where they're like, "Oh, you have to say the word student before athlete. You can't say athlete. You got to say student athlete." I'm like, well, who are we kidding here? Come on, man. So there's your Zen headline for the day. You got the Cavender awesome. Twins, who are massive on social media, and they are now kajillionaires. All right, that's all I need to know. Now I used to be like, this isn't right. You know what I mean? I've totally turned around on it. You know, I think that knowing what the business is, because we'll say it's not a business. The guys who it's a business for will say this is not a business. These are amateur athletes. Says the, you know, millionaire coach, says the millionaire TV executive, says the NCAA, you know, board of trustees, but, all this stuff. And those guys, these are guys making tons of money off of these players.
But those guys are still going to make tons of money. Like, it doesn't change things for them.
Of course not.
But
they think it does. They think that this is taken away from their cut.
They're still not going to have to pay these players. What I'm interested in seeing is which schools are going to be successful by being able to incorporate these quote unquote business opportunities and through the booster networks and things like that and really attract. Because if you've got a school with a great coach, right? Because what are the things that would attract an athlete to a school? Track record of success, right? A coach that you really click with, or a playing style that matches yours, mm-hmm. Right? There are any number of things that are on that side of the ball that would attract an athlete to a program. What if you add in, hey, everyone here is making more money than the other schools?
Yeah. No, that's what people, that's the thing now, that's both a criticism and a benefit, I think. Is to be able to go, well, these athletes, you know what they're doing. These schools are just rolling up and saying you can make a bunch of money on NIL if you come here. But why not? But why not say it? If these kids are worth it, their value is there.
Obviously, that's the case. But I think in that situation, I think we'll lose a lot in college athletics because
what are we losing?
We'll see a separation
of what?
We'll just see a separation
of what?
Well, if the elite athletes all go to the same schools only, I mean, we'll just
they already do. Here's the thing too.
But they have found
that there's a lot of these schools that are smaller that are actually now able to have a little bit more of a chance to get higher level athletes because of those NIL deals. Deion Sanders is an FCS level coach. He has 2 5-star recruits playing for him this year. Guys who would never previously go to a smaller school because they're able to say, "Hey, come here, make some money on top of what you're doing football wise. You're still going to get looked at." I mean, so
I don't know.
That's something that would have never happened with the previous system, which is just the rich getting richer.
I see your point for sure. But if a program is going to look, if a program is going to look at this as a way to turn around, if a school is going to look at this as a way to turn around their football program, what are they going to need? They're going to need a large economic base around the school. They're going to need a lot of wealthy people around the school to make this happen. But those are going to already be where the successful schools are. You're already going to have those established networks. And so I have a hard time believing that a smaller school with no program in an area with just doesn't have a lot of success. In the past, they could recruit, they could bring in, they could build something.
It takes a couple of successful alumni, which every school has, who will just go, "Hey, we want to be a part of this, and we're going to pay these players. We think we want to give back that way."
But you need more. You need more than that. And you need more than
I think this actually evens the playing field a little bit more. Because it's not like Alabama is a place that is looked at as some sort of a financial, you know, like, oh, they're just going to have money pouring in. Now they do because they have donors that are throwing a ton of money at that because football's life there. But so do these other smaller schools now.
I don't think that's what we'll find. You got to have decamillionaire and billionaire boosters to be able to do this. And when you look
No, no, no. It's not deca billionaire. Listen, so Built Bar did the whole thing with BYU this year, right? And I was trying to crunch the numbers in my head, just like as a rough thing. So they're basically paying the walk-on guys a scholarship. Every walk-on player is now a scholarship player because they get Built Bar money. And if you're already on scholarship, then you get extra money. It's like a cash payout, basically, from Built Bar for being a brand ambassador. So 130 guys. And I think that for the year it was like $7,000 or $8,000 or maybe $10,000 it was like $4,000 a semester that we estimated. And I think that it came out to like some number, like maybe $380,000, something like that. And I thought, which is a massive write-off for a company who basically got the best advertising ever. $380,000 is a total write-off because you're giving it to, you know, as like a, you know, as a donation, essentially. And to a nonprofit school.
That's where it is now. We're in year one. You give it another 5-10 years, and they're going to be having to rope in Ryan Smith.
I can't wait.
They're going to have to be roping in Ryan Smith.
As if they haven't already.
This is what I'm talking about is, you know, the schools that are already successful, they already have money around them. Yeah. They'll be the ones that are cutting the stuff.
These schools are such sellouts, dude. Flavors. These schools have become such sellouts. Anyway, this portion of the Nightside Project brought to you by ED.
I'm just saying,
ED medication.
I'm not saying these players shouldn't be paid. I think they should be paid. What I'm saying is that we're going to see the further kind of stratification of this process because there are going to be a lot of communities that are left behind.
Stratification. It's fake. That's a fake. That's what you learn in your financial job. It's not a real thing.
Stratification. But when you think about it, like what about a school that's successful in football
that doesn't
have a billionaire?
This is wild to me because you're the guy who usually stands up for the athlete who's being taken advantage of. And now you're going, "I don't know, man, getting this money back to you. Keep it in the pockets of the billionaires, man."
No.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying this is not going to create a level playing field. Money's going to continue to flow where there already is money.
There's already not
where the money already is.
All right, Millard.
You would have to basically to turn around a football program. You wouldn't have to find the right coach. You would have to find a money base, and that is a very, very different kind of thing. Because it used to be all about the coach, right? The coach could turn your program around. Start recruiting, things like that, get out there, hustle, bring the players in. Now you got to have an economic base. If you don't have an economic base, and you know what's going to happen is schools that have good programs with no economic base, they're going to lose their programs. They're not going to be as good because they can just get poached by a school that has boosters willing to just write checks.
So, Ethan, I came up with a concept of how to lock out the shows, and that's just playing music that is straight out of the FM catalogs. Of course, here in the building, we have FM 100.3 and we have the Arrow 103.5. And so I'm just going to pick a song out of those catalogs. And I clicked on the one at the very top. So this is how we're going to get out of the show today. Oh, yeah. Classic. All right, Millard, we'll be back again next week. Or will we? Because you're going to be doing the thing. How long are you guys in Disneyland? You guys got the 10-day pass? Is that what you guys did?
No. we're just a couple days.
Okay. For Ethan Millard, I'm Alex Keery. Have fun. Safe travels, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. I'm talking to you, Ethan. Jeez.
I said thanks.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Sharona's playing. Thanks.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.